Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from BreezeLine. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at BreezeLine.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Well, listener, you've done it again. You've stumbled into greatness. Welcome to the Three Questions with Andy Richter. I, as it turns out, am Andy Richter. And I am very happy to have a very dear and frankly queer friend on today.
You can say very queer and very dear.
Very dear and very queer. Yeah. I didn't say old.
That's all I really care about, because that's the only thing really that...
To say an old friend, you never know what that means.
No, in this town, I realize that's what's keeping me from the gates. Yeah, that's what's ruining everything. Is
but it's Scott Thompson. It is. Scott, and we've known each other for
25 years.
At least 25 years.
Yeah, at least. Because the first time I went on Conan would have been...
94-ish.
Yeah. It was the first time was when we did the sketch about whatchamacallit, with broke the ankle.
The Tanya Hardy.
You did a few.
You used to come in.
I used to come in all the time.
You used to come in all the time, and we would do these sort of like instant made-for-TV movies.
Yes.
And they were, it was whatever bullshit scandal was on, and I don't even remember all of them.
There were a few of them, but Tanya that was the Harding. One where I crushed someone between my legs. You played Todd Galooly, whatever, wasn't
no,
that
I,
one?
Yeah, I played the idiot
you were the
sidekick.
Idiot. Yeah.
Jeff Galooly was the boyfriend.
That's right.
And then I played the
other one.
Like, yeah,
I think Conan was Galooly.
The very low IQ sidekick. Yeah, I think you crushed Conan between
I might have crushed Conan. Yeah. We wrestled. So. We might have done that in the dressing room before the show.
For fun.
You might have just said, hey, this is what I do to help them warm up.
When I see you in a short skirt or a skort.
A skort, yes.
But no, and I remember too, I always look back on that because I remember you at one time after having done three or four of them. In which you were played a female in every one. You said,
"Yes, you did."
Hey, could I come back and play a male character?
And then I never did it again.
And I don't think
no.
And I personally, I was like, "Yeah, why don't we let Scott play a man?" But
no, they still won't let me.
Honestly, comedy, white male comedy, isn't real bright. It's like
straight white.
It can
male
be
comedy.
Clever. Yeah, straight white male comedy.
Everyone's trying to put me on that barge with you guys, but I refuse to go. I refuse to go.
Oh, really? People like try and lump you in.
Yeah,
with,
like now the gay white men are no longer. It's no longer cool. It's not good enough.
Oh, I see.
So,
but you're not part of the establishment. You're sort of your own.
I certainly am not.
Well, but you as in white gay comedians,
right.
Male comedians. Nobody considers you Jeff Foxworthy, do they?
I don't know what that means. He probably gets a lot more work than me, so I think they consider me lower.
But you know what I mean? But in terms of being problematic or being, the source of oppression in the comedy industry.
I always thought that when I got to this stage of the game, that I eventually, that being openly gay would not kill my career, which it did. I wouldn't say kill it, but it definitely kept my fire at an ember level.
Yeah.
But I do really believe right now that gay white men are being sort of reconfigured by the woke as also just part of the white male problem.
Mm.
And I actually refuse that. And I'm like, for the youngsters, sure, the ones that are born into their parents loving them and not kicking them out in the street, and the world not hating them and their friends all dying. That's okay. I mean, I still don't think they deserve that. But for me, like an old white guy, and I'm going to say old because I'll say it first.
Okay.
No way. Yeah. I won't go.
Yeah.
But I have to figure figure, I came back just over, about 3.5 years ago to Hollywood, and I really thought that this would be it for me. Like, finally, that door is open for me. But I really do think that me being a middle-aged white male is keeping that door closed.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that maybe not everybody thinks that, but I think there's definitely something going on psychologically and spiritually where gay white men are now trying to wrap us up as part of the problem too. Mm-hmm. And these are part of the kind of civil war that's going on within the LGBT community.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but I, as I said, I just refuse to. But I also, it's fascinating because now I'm so genetically constructed to identify with the underdog.
Yeah.
That now I look at like straight white guys and like I really feel for them.
Oh, really?
And I wish I didn't. Like I really wish that hatred that I hone to a fine edge I could maintain.
Yeah.
But I can't help but have empathy. Because I know exactly what it's like to be marginalized. And you're not marginalized, but the young ones are.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for them. And I don't think it's fair. And I call this era the punishment era.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be part of it because I didn't do this. I didn't wait for this moment so that we could punish people, like, you know, people of color punishing white people and women punishing men and gay people punishing the straights. I didn't see that coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually don't want to be part of it. But I really wish that I didn't. I really didn't wish I didn't have such empathy for you guys.
Yeah.
to kick you now that you're down.
I sort of want to get back to this because this podcast is a bit chronological where we start at your beginnings and go to your now.
How far do you, okay, you how deep do you want to go? Like, I mean,
as deep as you want to go.
I don't know. You really, you should never, you know how that goes with
me. I know.
You know.
I know.
Once, do you remember I used to promise to Jeff I wouldn't say something?
I wouldn't say stuff, and then you would say it.
And then I would say afterwards, like, right. Well, what were you thinking? You promised, and I would go to Jeff,
right.
Yeah, but I promised you last time I didn't do it. Like, the very definition of insanity is thinking that things will change if you're doing the right thing over, same thing over and over again.
Right.
So you're crazy.
But whose insanity is it? Is it your insanity?
No, it's
your
insanity.
We're responsible for what comes out of your mouth.
Yes. What? Well, of course. All I was ever doing on your show was trying to give you great television.
I understand. I agree. And
it's a game.
Listen, yeah, but you have that.
You're gorgeous. You've aged well. Say it, please.
You're beautiful. You are. People. I think it's time to dust off the word Adonis and put a gold plaque and put it on you, hang it around your neck by a chain.
Put me up with my guard chair.
No, what I was going to say is, you know, you could practically in those days though have had like a big loose cannon tattoo.
I understand that.
And that was sort of what was fun about you.
And then I think it became not fun.
Absolutely. And do not
blame you.
No.
Do
not ever be surprised by, and I, whether you, whoever you want to call it by you do too much and they go, okay, done. I mean they as a general they.
I think that's
happened. Yeah, as this business that shot Judy Garland full of speed.
Yes.
Because they wanted her to stay skinny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this business chews you up and spits you out.
Right. Exactly.
It's one of the reasons I live in an apartment building now that's full of little kid actors and their families.
Oh, and I have saddest to saddest thing I've ever
and they'll
heard.
Say things like They'll say things like, "Do any of your kids?" And I'll say, like, well, and I've started this conversation with, like, well, my daughter wanted to be an actor for a while. And then where the conversation is going, but I told her, no fucking way
good
am I
you.
Going to serve up my children to the steely knives of this angry,
this God,
woman-hating business.
This beast.
I told her flat out when she asked, because she had wanted to, because she had friends that were acting and making money, and she asked me, and I said, when I finally had to be frank with her, I said, you're going to be surrounded by people who tell you that they love you when they don't.
That's right.
They want to make money off you.
Yes.
They will treat you like they love you, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They want to make money off you. They will judge your voice. They will judge your body. Mm-hmm. They will judge your face. They will judge the way you move. They will judge the way you behave off camera. You will be in complete judgment by these adults that want to make money off you. As your father, I will not allow that to happen. When you're 16-ish, 17-ish, mm-hmm. you can go do whatever you want with your face and voice and body. But mm-hmm. for right now, I want to protect
you. You don't really mean that.
Yeah, no, I kind of do.
Anything they want with their face and body?
Pretty much.
At 16?
Absolutely.
Anything?
Well,
what if she said I want to do a porn?
No, well, there, those previous 16, 17 years inform you of your ability to let them go do that. Like my son, who is now 18.
Yes.
He's free to do whatever he wants because aside from being 18, I have nothing but trust in his judgments. Mm-hmm. I'm nervous. He just started college. We just dropped him off, and I'm a little nervous. Yeah, I'm just nervous because of the undoing that can happen to you psychically and emotionally when you go away from home. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like making choices, I don't worry about him. And my daughter, for the most part, I think she makes good choices. So I do feel like if she gets to be 16 and 17 years old and she wants to get a tattoo on her neck, mm-hmm. I will say to her, you will be limiting yourself.
Yes.
But if you really want to get a tattoo on your neck, go ahead, get a tattoo on your neck. Or if she wants to, for me, the most shocking thing would be with my children to be like, I want an MBA. That to me would be like a profound disappointment.
MBA meaning like not
Master's of Business Administration.
Oh, I thought you meant like an NDA, like a non-disclosure agreement.
No.
I thought that you did to your kids. You got to sign this NDA before I send you off to the real world.
No, that's just people that want to fuck Leo DiCaprio have to sign those.
Is that what's keeping him on top?
It's what I've heard.
Oh, it's got to be true.
But if my kid said to me, I want to work on a hedge fund. Right. I would feel like, what the fuck did I do wrong?
And that's not raising money for hedges.
No. Okay. It's raising money for it's raising money for equivocating. Hedging, you know. Well, maybe
it's
not.
It's hedging when a bush masturbates to the point of orgasm and then stops and waits until it gets a bud and then shoots.
Just a bud and then just stops. And it never goes any further.
That's such a great image. Two bushes to unite each other in one's body. What are you doing? I'm edging.
Well, all right. Let's do that because you know the three questions are here.
No, I refuse to look at them.
And you wonder why your show business poisoned.
I know I'm poisoned, but I want it to be spontaneous with you.
Well, the three questions are, and this was just, then it's just a gimmick to get to set the framework of the conversation.
Yeah.
Because quite frankly, what I've always loved about my job is the conversations that I get to have in a commercial break.
Oh, I totally agree.
You know what I mean? Like, because then I can say, is that guy a dick? What are your hours like? Hey, I saw that movie. That must have been rough. Oh, yeah. That's one of the best things to always do is after the clip, go to commercial and go like, so how is this thing? And then have somebody go like, oh my God, it's so fucking bad. That's just delightful. That
people of course it is.
Still maintain a realness.
We had
them.
Some good conversations in between.
Oh, absolutely. But commercial breaks and beyond. But the three questions here are, where do you come from? Where are you going? And what have you learned? So it's just basically excuse to have, you know, so where were you born? I know you're from Ontario, yeah?
I brought my passport just to remind you.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, it's very worn. You can barely see the Royal Seal of Canada.
I know.
But you do have your visitor.
Pass.
Okay, your first name is John.
Yes, it is.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. Revelations.
Wait, and isn't John Thompson a euphemism for a dick?
That's called a Johnson.
No, I think you're John Thompson. I think that
maybe this country because Thompson was a Canadian prime minister, never have made that.
Because
a euphemism
I thought it was by the way, your papers look in order. Tossed them back to him.
Thank you, sir.
I thought that was like a Monty Python thing.
I did not know that.
But I don't, you know.
I think we'll I would
Google
have heard
it later.
It.
We'll Google it later.
Okay.
You know, you're Roger. You know, you're Roger, you Roundly.
Oh, that's
you're
totally.
Johnson. Yeah, but I thought there was a, you're John Thompson. But whatever.
It could
anyway,
be.
John.
Yeah.
Why no John? Were you Scott? Is your middle name Scott?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I was never, ever called Scott.
See, I'm Andy and I'm Paul Andrew Richter.
Oh, so you're the same.
I am the same, yeah.
Don't you find that's problematic? And wouldn't you tell parents don't do that? Because it's very difficult for paperwork and stuff.
Yeah, it's. I'll tell you, the only time that it was convenient, well, it is convenient sometimes in that it does lend a layer of anonymity to staying in a hotel or something like that.
Okay.
Which I don't ever have to worry about very much. But like when I used to do years and years ago college dates. Mm-hmm. And I'd go to a small college town and I'd do, you know, like a 3-hour show. And then I'd stay in the only hotel in town. And if I stayed under my own name at 2 o'clock in the morning, my room phone would ring.
Right.
Hey, come on over. Yeah. You know. So
did you ever do it?
So is Paul Rick? No. Okay. That's not me. And I would not. No, to go drink with children is not my idea of a good time. And I would hear stories too from like kids of previous adults that had been there to do things that had actually gone and done to the, you know, gone to these parties. And I just, that's not.
But it's such a problem when you're flying. I've actually not gone on, they've not let me on flights because I bought the flight of Scott Thompson. I present this and then they won't let me on. And that never happened until like the last 20 years.
I did have issues. People used to buy me plane tickets as Andy Richter and then I'd show up as Paul Andrew. And only a kid that. Almost always it was okay, but sometimes because they see Andrew. Yeah, but it can be a problem.
It just depends on what mood they're in.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, but now everything's so your first middle, you know, you have to use your full name now. So it's actually sort of like.
Do you?
It's more of a uniform thing.
Oh, then that's what I've been doing wrong.
Yeah. You should definitely book everything as your full name.
John Scott Thompson?
Yeah.
It's just so pretentious.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can drop the Esquire.
But I mean, you have enough of an accent that you sound kind of English. You know, Canadian is like.
Is that really what it sounds like to you guys?
No. But I do think that people do think of Canadian as being like English light.
Yes.
So I think that people think of Canadians as having a hair more sophistication.
Yes.
Than
Americans. But don't you think they also consider like?
But I also think Canadians do have a hair more sophistication than the average American.
I'd say a wig more.
Yeah.
But I also think that we are also like American light. We're both.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
And I think the French consider the Quebecois also as sort of French, but not quite.
Right. Exactly.
But yeah, and I'm actually very comfortable with identifying with both of the countries.
Both of the countries, sure.
Yeah, actually three. I guess I would be I'm not tri-national, but I identify as a Canadian, number one. But I'm also, I'm not an American, but I got American value. But
sure.
But England too, I very much identify as England. I don't find it foreign at all.
Have you lived a lot in England or been a lot?
I've been a million times.
Yeah.
My best friend lives there.
Is your family English?
You mean like ethnically?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
My mother's Irish and my father's Cornish.
But are they Canadian?
Oh, they're Canadian.
Canadian.
Yeah, we're
born.
Fifth generation.
Oh, wow.
They call us, we're old school, old stock, which is very, that's actually a really.
Old stock makes a bad soup, though.
It's a vitriol. That's a very, that'll get you, won't be able to say that on a Canadian television show.
Oh, really?
Old stock's like kind of, not a racist term. I don't think it is. It's just because it defines, just says who you are. But it basically refers to the first wave of immigrants who were mostly from that part of the world.
Yeah.
Northern Europe.
And is it a pejorative now, saying old stock, or it's a boastful thing?
It used to be boastful, uh-huh. But now as things are changing and no one wants to be identified as white, it is becoming I think it is becoming a little bit negative.
Yeah.
But yes, I was born in Canada, Northern Canada, Ontario.
In Ontario, yeah.
A place called North Bay.
And Northern Ontario can be bleak. It's beautiful.
It's
but
stunning.
Yeah.
You mean like culturally?
Yes.
Yes.
You are, I know because I had relatives that lived in Sudbury for a while.
Well, that's where I'm from.
Oh, really?
Not Sudbury, but North Bay, which is very close to Sudbury.
But Sudbury also,
that's
too.
That's super bleak.
That's super bleak because they've raped the earth for so long.
Yeah, you can't really. Yeah.
It's all strip mining and
Have you ever been to anywhere but Sudbury in the north?
Not in the north, no. No, I have not. So
you did go to Sudbury as a kid?
Yeah, a long time ago, yeah.
Oh, interesting. No, the problem with Sudbury is...
You know what? I just saw pictures. But I've been to Canada when I was a kid. My grandmother had a bunch of Canadians. My grandmother was born in China to Swedish missionaries.
Oh.
And when the Boxer Rebellion happened, all the children spread and a lot of them ended up in Canada and a lot of them ended up like in Nebraska, like all rural places around North America.
That's why you seem kind of Canadian.
I think Midwesterners are fairly
Canadian.
Oh,
that's got to be.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like if you're from Wisconsin, you might as well be from Ontario.
I remember my parents went to see Fargo many years ago. They walked out.
Because they found it offensive?
Yes!
Yeah.
And my mom was like, oh, jeez, I didn't go to a movie to watch them insult Canadians. And I went, my, they're not Canadian. Oh, don't tell me those are Americans. They're Canadians. Her father and I were absolutely, we were furious. We walked out. Walked out of Fargo. I love them for
that's
that.
That's fantastic.
I remember when I was 16, I went... I was speaking of walking out of movies, good movies. When I was 16, my best friend and I went and saw Annie Hall.
Uh-huh.
We walked out. About 10 minutes into it, we were like, this is terrible. Let's get out of here. We walked out of Annie Hall.
Because it was just boring to you?
I still think it's not that
great.
Yeah,
it's completely, I honestly...
so overrated. Mm-hmm. We had nothing to relate to. We were both like both closeted gay kids. And we're like, this is dumb. Let's go see the internet. We left... Left the movie, went and saw Corvette Summer. Much better movie. Very underrated gem. And I'd love to go in some sort of snotty kind of like film form and go, oh yeah, Corvette Summer is, that's the real Annie Hall.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I'm no fan of Woody Allen, and I don't even know.
Oh, I am fan of some other things, but not that one.
I have grown just so tired of the Woody Allen experience. Mm. And having lived in Manhattan and go to see Woody Allen movies and then just have like just the slightest nothing of something that is even like a feather of a joke and people just roaring with laughter.
I know.
And my wife and I used to kid that it was like, and I'm gesturing that like you put your arm above your head and point down at your own head while you laugh at a Woody Allen movie. So everyone knows. I get it.
Woody and
I are on the same page.
I think he was overrated and now he's underrated.
Yeah, that's,
and then eventually,
that's possible. Yeah.
I think people will come to grips with the way he really
his recent movies that I have seen.
Oh, terrible.
I just am like.
Oh, terrible.
Why would anyone want to care about this?
Oh, my God. The Paris movie? What a garbage movie. Garbage fire.
Vicky Cristina Barcelona. Beyond. That was the last one. I just was like, who is this for besides Woody Allen?
You know, the last 10, 15 years of his work, I think the best one would have been that tennis movie.
Yeah.
The murder tennis movie.
I didn't see it. I got it.
Really good. And it wasn't even a comedy.
Thank God it was about a murder. At least it was about something other than just people talking about their fucking angst.
See, but my favorite Woody Allen movie is Interiors.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's
that is really good. Because it's like about people really fucking each other over.
Well, it's about wasps.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always think that movies about a certain like ethnic group or cultural group, I think they're quite often best done by an outsider.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I also, too, Woody Allen peoples his movies with Woody Allen.
Oh, totally.
It makes the women talk like Woody Allen, makes the men talk like Woody Allen, and I just, that offends my Midwestern don't toot your own horn.
Whereas in Corvette Summer, Annie Potts was Annie Potts. And that was when you thought Mark Hamill.
Yeah, Hamill's
you thought
that.
Mark Hamill might have a real career.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know people think, what? He's Mark Hamill, he's got a real career. I go, no, not really.
No, he actually, you know what, he's done.
He's a cartoon guy.
Yeah, huge. Yeah. That's
the part.
And believe me. That's a nice life.
Oh, and
when you
love
get in
that
on that
life.
On that cartoon life, I mean, because it's very frustrating to try and get into the cartoon voice world because there's about 10 people that they just go to for everything.
Right.
And then when you work with them, you go, oh, yeah.
I get it.
Because these fucking people can do anything.
Yeah.
It's among the most jaw-dropping, witnessing a performance that I've ever been in.
Yeah, I totally
agree. Watching them throw, like, here's a character, it's a French toddler, and they fucking nail it.
I
like
know.
That. And then it's like, okay, here's a, you know, here's an old parrot, you know, that has Tourette's.
Right.
And then it's just bap, bap, bap. They do it, you know. So it's, you know. But anyway. You were, were you
Bay.
Part of a large family?
Large family.
Are you in town? Or are you rural? Or are you?
Well, it's a small town back then. I mean, everything is rural in the north.
Yeah.
Would you call Sudbury urban?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a town, you know.
It's a town. It was a big mining town.
It's more than one stoplight.
It was definitely bigger than North Bay. Sudbury was famous because it destroyed its landscape with
the mining.
The mining.
Yeah.
And that's also where the American astronauts trained for the moon.
Yes.
Because the surface.
And they've shot movies there.
Yes. Oh, many.
Lunar landscape movies.
Yeah, because they literally destroyed the environment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I grew up in a large family in Northern Ontario. Four brothers.
So four brothers.
Five boys.
All boys. Mm-hmm. Your mother. Oh,
yes,
boy.
Yes, I know.
Was it hard for her?
Oh, difficult.
Did she work or was she...
No, God,
she had to take care of five fucking boys.
Yeah. And actually, you know, like the first, I think she had a hell of a time because she's from the South and so is my dad, like, you know, and, but he got his first job was working in the airports.
Uh-huh.
So he was an engineer
and
they were building an airport in North Bay. So he oversaw that, the runways.
Right.
Concrete and and cement. I remember the best conversation I ever had with my father, and actually the longest, was about the difference between concrete and cement.
Wow.
And that's because it was during the time when I said to myself, the only way to get into this old man is to start asking him things that interest him. And one day on a long car ride, I said, Dad, what's, as if I had any interest in it, but I went, what's the difference between concrete and cement? And his eyes lit up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was all about aggregate and stones and slurry. And I was like, oh God, I wish I hadn't opened that door. But it was, it really was.
Yeah.
To this day, if anyone asks me, I can tell them, which is, but I'm still not a contractor. But I could do it.
But you know the difference.
I know the difference.
It's also, too, the fact that, like, that your father is about concrete.
Yes.
You know, it's like there's no better author than life.
That is true.
You know what I mean?
Engineer with a concrete mind.
Yeah.
Engineers have those minds.
And then here you've got, who are not concrete.
He had a cardboard kid.
Yeah.
like
the ones. Well, I would say more of like a, just a.
Cheesecloth?
No, I would say like a roving creature, like a spirited, an open spirit.
A wild thing.
Yeah.
That's not that I will
I
take
think
that.
So. I definitely
yes,
think so.
I
yeah,
will
yeah.
take that.
Because you know.
He had no idea how to deal with it.
Yeah.
He was no idea. Now I've spent a lot of time lately. He's still alive. He's 90 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's still got his faculties.
Your mom's still here too? Or?
Yes, but she's in a home. She's got dementia.
Yeah,
She's long gone.
Yeah.
She's still there and she occasionally,
I know how
you know what it's
I have
like.
Relatives,
it's
yeah.
rough.
Yeah.
But my dad's still, he's still quite together. He's quite jaunty and he's like catnip for all the women in his assisted living.
He lives alone, but just...
He lives alone in his own apartment.
Yeah.
But he takes
Is your mom in the same place?
No.
Oh, okay.
Very close. It's there in Brampton, because that's where eventually they moved down
mm-hmm.
to. But I guess what my point was earlier was like, the first 9 years of my life I spent in North Bay.
Yeah.
And then my parents brought us down south. But my parents, when they went up to North Bay, they didn't really know what the North was like. My father fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was always out and about doing like surveying expeditions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They'd go for weeks at a time into the bush and they'd stay in cabins and that sort of thing. So he loved it. But my mother was isolated. She didn't have friends. She didn't speak French. I mean, it was a very French-English town.
Yeah.
And she was completely isolated. And then just bang, 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 she just had these kids, one kid after another. And I don't think she really wanted to have all those kids.
Right.
She just wanted a company.
Yeah, yeah.
But she had a rough time. I remember, you know, she had a rough time up there. There's no question. And we lived on a lake.
Yeah.
So you had all these kids on a lake, like with a dock. When I was first born, my first 5 years were absolute paradise because we lived on a lake and we got to town in a boat. And
oh,
I don't think there's anything better than
that. Oh,
that's one of those like those boats with the paneling on the side. Do
yeah,
you remember
yeah.
those?
Like the Chris Craft kind of old.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like
it
sort of looked mahogany.
That's exactly
oh,
it.
Oh, yes.
Beautiful. You could
oh,
smell the cedar right
gorgeous.
Now.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when she went up there, she had a hard time. I remember one time my mom, at this point, she only had four of us, but we were all little. Like she had
were you the fourth?
Second.
Second. Oh, okay.
And she was lunchtime and... I don't know. She fell asleep when she was making us lunch, and I guess she woke up and there was a fire.
Oh boy!
So the firemen were there, and that's when I think I decided that firemen are really something. And I think
Mom,
she
why
did.
Mom, why don't you burn the house down again?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think she might have done it on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Oops, a daisy left another candle by the curtains.
Oh, God, another hot fireman's going to come in and put out the, you know.
How old were you at that age?
Six.
Wow.
And I remember it.
Yeah, yeah.
Really clear because I'm going, Mom, wake up. She was just so tired. She wouldn't wake up.
Was she asleep on the couch or in the bed?
No, like at a kitchen table.
Oh, wow. Oh my goodness.
Another time we were, I remember, it was pretty idyllic, it really, like my brother. We got to school through the woods, we cut through the woods, and it's crazy. No one would ever allow that today. But there was one day my oldest brother ran into a clearing with a mama bear and her two cubs. Mm. And that's the thing you're most terrified of there. And so he got chased by the bear, got treed, wow. And he had to wait until because they can climb trees, but he sure. got so high he couldn't get up to get him.
Yeah, yeah.
He must have been about 7 or 8. And he came running home crying and told my mom, and she didn't believe him. She was like, oh, get off. Don't tell someone that cares. She just didn't have the time for it. I don't think she just didn't believe him. So he had to go to the neighbor, and she believed him. And the next thing you know, mom opens the door. Oh, who's this? It's the bear people to come and tranquilize the bear. So there was always, I just say, a lot of hot men peering at the door with guns and nets.
Yeah, to take care of deadly problems.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyways, and then I was 9, my dad got transferred to Toronto, and we moved down south to Brampton, where I spent the rest of my growing up, which I think really formed me, because I was like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact, with semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch. It's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches, but there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
What were your interests as a kid? Like, were you a sporty? Were you a TV watcher? Were you?
No, I really was not a huge... I mean, we all watch TV.
Right.
I wasn't a big movie buff. I mean, I liked movies. I liked TV. But my number one thing was books.
Uh-huh.
I was a real egghead.
Yeah.
I love books, particularly science fiction.
Were you the only one in the family, or was
yes.
it? Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm not the smartest one, but I was definitely the only one that was just obsessed with reading.
Yeah.
And more than television and more than movies. And also because maybe if I'd lived in a family with less children, mm-hmm. I would have had more access to the television.
Yeah.
But we were such a rambunctious group that the power dynamic was who got control of the changer.
Of course.
Constantly we were pulling it off the TV and hiding it so you couldn't change it. Then all of us kids had to get wrenched to turn it.
Remember
those days?
It's pre-remote. Yeah,
pre-remote.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really allowed to watch what I wanted. Like if my brothers ever came home and watched me, caught me watching like, you know, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes or, you know, All About Eve, they would have pummeled the shit out of me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I never got, it was always Wide World of Sports. Let's watch that guy wipe out again.
Yeah.
So it was sports, sports, sports.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Was reading an escape?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a very cacophonous, kind of a violent, it was a violent household.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a wall that didn't have a hole in it.
Oh, boy.
And so I definitely escaped my very first, I think my greatest pleasure, my greatest artistic influence on me as a child would have been the Narnia books. Oh, I was obsessed with C.S. Lewis.
I love those books too, yeah.
I continue to keep going back to them.
The power of those books is children getting to be in charge.
Absolutely.
Children in charge.
Children in charge.
In charge of a magical land and being in charge and on their own.
On their own. Like Pippi Longstocking. I was obsessed with Pippi Longstocking.
On their own, they become in charge. And then also the thing that blew my mind is that they got to be adults in Narnia.
Yeah.
And then they step back through that fucking closet.
Yeah, I know.
And they're right back to where they were.
Can you imagine?
So they're children with the knowledge of adults.
Who've had sex.
Yes.
Who had fully developed genitals.
Absolutely.
That's all I thought about.
I know. Well, that's like in Jumanji, this. And everyone hates when I say this, but Bonnie Hunt's character, she's lived this that sad woman who never got married, that old trope of she's just, disappointed and had all these terrible affairs. And then she goes back to be a kid again and then gets to start over a lifetime of bad fucking in her head
as a
child.
Do you think that's possible to overcome?
How would you all of a sudden at eight and then you get to have all these like drunken assignations floating around in your head at like nine. And then you're supposed to go like, I like Timmy, you know?
I can't wait for our first kiss.
Yeah. I can't wait for our first kiss. And then the first time that like he comes too fast.
Exactly.
You know?
You're like, exactly.
And then leaves.
You're like 14. You're like, harder. Yeah, yeah. What the hell? Pull my hair, you idiot.
I can't wait for him to insult my ass.
Spankings aren't just for discipline, you moron. Get to it.
Oh, yes.
But well, I did love it. And I also found, I don't know how you felt about the Narnia books in terms of, then there came a point about maybe 20 years ago when people started to go, they're all just propaganda for Christianity.
Yeah, and I'm like, sure are.
But it never crossed my mind. Mm-mm. Never crossed my mind that Aslan was Jesus.
Me neither. I mean, and
it doesn't change my love of it.
Yeah. Oh, no.
As if they're bad lessons.
Well, and also sort of like, metaphors for Christianity are present in Western civilization.
What?
Gee whiz.
Are you crazy? The thing is, this is what I really worry about. I worry a lot about the future, and I worry about young people. What are you gonna do? It's their problem now. Don't bother me with it.
Sorry, kids. As long as you put me in a floatable bed, I don't care.
That is what I want—a floatable bed, but in a parade. I would like to be in a parade.
Water parade.
Yes, but I did. I thought. You like Narnia? What are you? Regressive? I'm like, oh, please. I was a child. I'm not saying anything.
Right.
But I tell you, I that was it for me. Books. Science fiction.
Yeah.
Pulp, the classic pulp era, the 70s. That was my absolute escape.
Yeah.
I mean.
And what age did you know that you were gay, if I may ask?
Oh, you just did.
Yeah. I mean, because you could tell me to fuck off, but I mean,
why
come
would
on.
I do that?
I don't know. It would make for a bad podcast. That's for sure.
I'd only tell you to fuck off to turn you on. So fuck off, Andy.
Oh. Slide whistle, please.
Oh, people, don't deny our chemistry. We've had it forever.
We sure have.
But yeah.
If only my fucking heterosexuality didn't get in the way.
Yeah, me too. Oh, I feel the same way. Boy. Not my heterosexuality, but, you know, it'd be interesting. If I was straight and you were, I was a woman, you'd probably made a pass at me.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. That's
absolutely.
All I needed to hear.
Absolutely. No. You're a brilliantly funny, interesting person that I have loved for many years. So thank there you. You go.
But what was your question about?
When did you know you were gay? When were you aware of it?
I mean, I always knew that I was very different. I always knew that I didn't fit into the world. But that also just could have been because I'm that person anyways.
Yeah. That's a very good point.
Like I could have still been a straight
guy. Because there's plenty of conforming gays.
Absolutely. And there's plenty of straight people that are as weird as hell.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was probably around 8 or 9 where I sat myself down. Even earlier, I knew I liked boys better. I didn't, and then I guess around 8 or 9, I remember very clearly, I used to try to do things to stop it. Like around 8 or 9, I started to punish myself for impure thoughts about men.
You're Catholic, I
No, I'm not.
No, not. Wow.
No.
With that big family and everything, too.
I know. No, I'm Protestant.
Yeah.
I'm an Anglican, which is what we call
Episcopal.
Episcopal.
Yeah.
No, I was not. I was not Catholic. But I have a lot of high Anglican, which is very close to Catholic Catholicism.
Yeah.
But I used to punish myself to try to stop it. I would deny myself certain foods. So every day was Lent. and I would always think, like, you know, I would
and
go.
Would you go the nine yards and deny yourself foods that you actually enjoyed? Or
only
would you,
like, foods that I enjoyed.
Oh, okay. I won't eat a lentil. You know,
well, it would have been a this is really
sweets
weird.
And things or
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I would this is really embarrassing. And I actually have never quite realized it until now what I was doing, but I would deny myself phallic-shaped foods.
Wow.
Like bananas was my first thing that had to go
wow.
out. They had to go out the door. I could not enjoy bananas.
Well, they certainly aren't going in the door.
No, they certainly weren't.
Mm.
Not peeled.
Right.
They're not. But, you know, and I would deny it. And then I would, you know, I would usually take about the same, it's like Lent, about 4 weeks, 6 weeks. And then if I still thought about men, I'd have to pick on another food. And then it would be pudding. So I guess it would be
banana and pudding? Or would it
would
you
been
go
one.
Like, okay, I tried bananas, but now I can go back
maybe
to
I went from phallic-shaped things to lube, things that reminded me of lube.
Sure. Or loads.
Or loads.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Or loads.
Vanilla pudding. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Ah, interesting. I'm figuring things out.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
But yeah, so I would, and then it came to a point where I just quit, where I'd punish myself. I would like, I wasn't a cutter, but I would hurt.
Like pinch and things like that?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's silly. And then I just had to eventually come to grips with it. And then I thought, oh, there's no, my whole life will just be horrible.
Yeah.
All gay men eventually are murdered in a parking lot like Salminio, or they die of alcoholism like Paul Lind, or they're an overdose
or
they're murdered. I just assumed.
Do you have an idea like when you first became aware of gayness as a thing, you know, like in terms of like,
oh, yeah.
This is the way some people live.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it would have been, and it terrified me. I mean, it just terrified
yeah.
me. And in those days, nobody was open,
uh-huh.
but there were a few beautiful heroes. And they were like Gore Vidal,
mm-hmm.
James Baldwin, Truman Capote,
mm-hmm.
you know, those are the only Tennessee Williams.
Yeah.
And they are almost exclusively writers.
Yeah.
And, they were my heroes,
mm-hmm.
you know, except for, but Truman Capote skeeved me out. I was so horrified by him, even though I knew he was a brilliant man,
mm-hmm.
but his effeminacy, it made me so terrified
because
I thought, oh my God, the moment I declare what I am, I will be such a queen. And that was the worst. Well, the worst thing you could be was a homosexual, but an effeminate homosexual was the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
And so every time I'd see him, I would just be sick. You know, and I loved Paul Lynn. It was my only impersonation that I could do.
Yeah.
But he was not, no, or Charles Nelson Reilly.
Yeah.
And those are the ones where I went, those are gay men.
Right.
You know, but they scared me because they were, we could say it faggy in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
I said it, effeminate.
Yeah.
And that terrified me. But that's when I started to realize, I think it was probably through James Baldwin and Tennessee Williams, number one.
Like, at what age is this?
Well, this would
13,
have been.
14?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah. I had a teacher. He was an amazing teacher. And everyone loved this man. And I realized he was most likely homosexual.
Yeah, I had a very formative teacher like that,
yeah.
too. That years later, thinking back, I was like, oh, no,
yeah.
Yeah,
and he was he would do things like, and this is his beautiful outreach to kids like me in that time. He had a little... He taught us English, and I was in enriched English, so we were a smaller class,
mm-hmm.
and there was a little library he had at the back, and there'd be about maybe 20 books. And so for someone like me, he would say, oh, why don't you go take a look at this shelf?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was never labeled, and it would be James Baldwin, you know, Tennessee Williams, Gore Vidal, Truman Capote, those books. And it was Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin
mm-hmm.
That really opened me, me up. That was when, it's still my favorite novel of all time.
Oh,
it's,
wow.
It's a beautiful, beautiful
I've never
book.
Read it. I will, yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah.
So it was through those those people that I started. And then I started to explore the whole world of it. You know, and I mean, gay liberation was just in its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
But as
what
a young
year is this about?
This would have been like in the early, I guess, early 70s.
Yeah.
And so I would read about, you know, I would read about homosexuality. You know, there would be a cover, there was once a cover of Life magazine, and it was like, the homosexual. And it was just darkness and a face in the dark, a shadowy figure in the darkness. And then, like, when I was like, that's the way it was back then. But but I knew. And all I wanted to do was get out so that I could be myself. Mm-hmm. And I really just, I really thought, well, you know, it's going to be a rough, rough road. And that was before AIDS happened. Mm-hmm. And then I went, oh, they just tore up the rough road.
Yeah.
They didn't even give us a road.
Yeah, or there's snipers in the trees
now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was tough. Like, I'm blessed and cursed to have been born into the most, I think, the most difficult generation for homosexuals, particularly gay men.
Yeah.
And that forged me. I really do believe I was forged in a fire.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing the difference, because I have an 18-year-old son who's gay.
I know.
Who came out to us when he was 11.
Yeah.
And just, and then, and like I say often, he came out to us when he was 11, and then we didn't talk about it for about 6 years. Because he just.
That's still wonderful.
Yeah, because it was, you know, and anyway, who wants their parents in on their sexuality or on their burgeoning identity?
I know.
Why would you want your parents?
All of us have Kurt Russell for a dad. Yeah.
But and also too, he had the benefit of growing up in Los Angeles.
Oh my God. When you told me that, I was like, I'm moved.
For me to bring in his prom picture of him, because he has a boyfriend that they've been together for about 2 years, and they are just the most lovely couple, they're beautiful people, but they're also just, both of them are just really sweet, wonderful people. And they have such a loving relationship. And they, like for me to bring their prom picture to work and to show it to the gays at work here, my gays.
Yeah.
Gays here at work.
Kathy Griffin now?
I sure am. Oh, no. No, I showed it to some of the men here at work, and it's
older men?
Yeah, and it's really hard for them.
Oh, I mean,
In one sense, it's beautiful and they're so happy. And then another sense, there's this, why couldn't I have had that?
Oh, there's a fury.
Why couldn't I have had that?
Oh, no, there's men.
And it's entirely relatable. Because, the fuck couldn't you have had that? You know, just because of stupidity.
That's where I'm at right now in my life, looking at it and going, holy cow, did we suffer? And I look at men my age and I just think, we're just a wasteland. We're wrecked and ruined. And I'm trying very hard to put myself back together again.
Yeah.
But there's another thing, and I don't know if we discussed that time at your house, but I had to go into therapy for it. And that was my fury.
Yeah.
And my jealousy.
Yeah, yeah.
And to think that, and particularly for me, it was particularly intense because I helped create this.
You're a public
world.
Figure, yeah.
I helped build this building, and there's no room for me.
Yeah.
No apartment for me.
Yeah.
And that broke my heart. And I went, because my therapist had a gay son too. And he was like 16, and he was exploring drag. And my first impulse was, I want to kill you all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he was like, when men talk about their gay son and they're not infuriated or disgusted, there's a part of me that can't believe it.
Yeah.
Like, I understand it on paper, but I don't know if it's really possible for me to believe that they mean it. And I'm so hurt by society, what it did to us, that I'm just waiting for the turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The turn in
bad,
you?
Going bad again. No, I'm waiting for society to turn on us again.
But what about a turn in you?
That's the thing. You're the one that, you're one person that helped me with that. We had that discussion when I talked about this. And you said, think of it as having a child. You've given your whole life to them. You've sacrificed your life for that child. And they don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And really, they don't have to.
Yeah.
And I thought a lot about what you said to me. And I went, well, that's have you ever said anything wise before?
Once or twice.
I mean, because I know you're hilarious and you're smart, but I mean, this fucker getting wise?
But I'm sorry.
I know, it's sorry.
But a friend of mine, a writer named Nicole Cliff, who's on Twitter, she did a thread on Twitter about a conversation that she had with her dad. And it was – and this is sort of also at the time that my marriage is ending and my son's going off to college and all these things. And it was very moving to me. Her father said to her – and it was when she was recounting when she was about to have her first child. And her father, who's not a very demonstrative man, said to her – he said, you know, the thing about having a kid is that you're not that sure. – And then here they are, and you've never felt a love this intense in your life. And it just grows and grows and grows. And the child necessarily needs you less and less and less.
Yeah.
So you have cursed yourself to a lifetime of unrequited love.
You're speaking to me directly and through metaphor, aren't you?
I certainly am.
Yes.
I certainly am. And that's
Are you saying that I need to get over it?
A little bit.
Oh, you're absolutely right. That is what I'm working on now.
Yeah, because what other choice do you have?
Yeah, well, I've thought very much about that because I've been very – the last few years, I've been kind of consumed with this idea that I've been forgotten. And I know these are very – I'm embarrassed by this, but to say it to you, I don't mind.
Listen, I'm in relative terms, like, I have enjoyed a great amount of success.
You have.
I make a really good living, and I've been on this.
You didn't invent podcasts, though.
I certainly didn't invent. We'll get back to that. but there still is in me, why don't I have this? Why don't I have that?
I totally understand
and
that.
And having encountered various people that weren't necessarily like my heroes, but certainly were kind of highlights to me and aspirational figures in my young comediness, and meeting them now and hearing how bitter they are, and thinking, be careful, Andy.
Yes.
Don't do that.
Yes.
Try and be as happy as you can with the goodness that you have.
But you seem to have done that.
I do, but I still I have to fight the bitterness.
But the really petty part of me goes, yeah, well, that's easy when you're a straight white man.
Yeah.
And that's petty.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, anybody can overcome this. And there are people that have suffered so much that have turned into beautiful spirits when they're older.
Anybody
like
can
that,
be happy.
There's this woman who recently died who was a Holocaust survivor, and there's a documentary about her, and she's just the most bright, she was like in her 80s, lively, warm, empathetic people. And I'm going, I could become that, but I could become the other too. And I'm at a crossroads.
Yeah.
And I know that. What you said to me is one of the things that keeps ringing in my head. Like, remember what Andy said, you just have to accept you do something because it's the right thing. End of story.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite there, but I'm working on it.
But also, you are deeply, deeply appreciated by many, many, many people.
Well, that's nice to hear.
You truly, truly are.
But the petty part of me goes, well, then why have I not been on television 20 years? Like, why do I have no career?
I don't know. I don't, because it's a mean fucking business.
Yes, which is what we said at the beginning, which is true. And it really doesn't care about you.
And I, quite frankly, I have been in a very sheltered harbor of show business, thanks to Conan O'Brien, for many, many years. So I could, there's times when I will think more expansively. And I mean, and quite frankly, when I left the show the first time, a lot of it was just itchiness, was an expansive sort of like, hey, I've enjoyed some success and I'd like to trade this coin in and see if I can get another coin that might be more meaningful to me or bigger to me or whatever.
And that's
in a young person's brain.
That's when you were doing like Andy Richter Controls the Universe, which was a wonderful show.
Yeah. And I mean, thank you. And so I came to LA. I was the star of three different network sitcoms.
Yeah, wow.
And I can, and then none of them worked out. So I can sit here and I can think, ah, fuck, three-time failure, three strikes, you're out.
Yeah.
Fuck you, says show business. We gave you your chance.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, after that, I pitched a sketch comedy to Comedy Central, which in my arrogance at the time, I was like, come on. Me, a sketch comedy show at Comedy Central, that's a fucking no-brainer. And I wrote a really fucking funny show.
Right.
To which the guy in charge of the time kept saying to me, I love these sketches. They're all so funny. I just can't figure out why they all live together. And I said, well, you know, I'm in all of them. Like, that's sort of a through line, yeah. is my presence in all of them. Yeah. He's like, yeah, but they're just all about different stuff. And I'm just like, have you never fucking seen SNL?
Yeah.
Like, but, and I would joke with them and say, do you want the Bong Report? Like, is that what you're looking for? And he'd be like, no, that's not what I'm looking for. And then after, and they turned me down. And after they turned me down, like 3 days later, I saw a billboard for David Alan Greer had a show called The Chocolate News.
Right.
And I went, holy shit, they did want the Bong Report. They want a show, a sketch show that's about the same thing all the time. And so I didn't, this thing that I thought was a no-brainer that I could make happen, it didn't happen. And at the same time, I went back to, you know, Conan came to me and said, would you like to be on The Tonight Show? Which, who the fuck am I to turn down? I mean, I always said I didn't want to be Ed McMahon, but who am I to turn down a tenured professorship in show business, which is what being on The Tonight Show is supposed to be. But I, you know, I, like I said, I had those three shows. Three strikes, you're out. Oh, fuck, I'm a failure. But then it's like, no, I was the star of a network sitcom three fucking times. Yeah. How can I look at that as anything but a good thing?
Yes.
I haven't been the star of a network television show since. Right. But, you know, and like I say, I have this safe harbor that if I want to think about it, I could think like, well, good thing I'm here because out there in the cold world, I don't know that I would have. I don't know if I would be in the same position, or I don't know if I would have thrived, or I don't know if I wouldn't be doing corporate gigs or something, you know? So you just, you know, I have that benefit, but I do not know what would have been out there in the absence of this part of my life and this TBS show. So all I can do is look at the parts of my life that are the truly meaningful ones, which is, you know, and I mean, and it's easy when you have kids. But I just, you know, you have to work at being okay with what you've got, you know? Mm-hmm. And it seems sometimes like a trick that you're playing on yourself. Yeah, but hey, you know, the clock is ticking. Yes, so you might as well get satisfied as quick as you can.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess part of my problem was I gave myself so wholly to it, show business, that I neglected to build the other side.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at now going, what have I done?
Yeah.
I really thought that at this point in my career, there'd be parades for me for what I did. And I would just like, I would just never have to buy a drink again. Yeah. And I have to accept that's not going to happen.
And also,
parades are overrated.
Well, yeah. I mean, but like, do you think that would have necessarily satisfied you?
No, because you know deep down,
because I
don't know if it's possible.
I call them world eaters. They're people that just they can't. It's never enough.
Yeah,
and that no matter the level that they get to, there's always going to be. And they this. Well, first of all, I think this business, we all have a touch of it. We all have a touch of it. It's what got us out of where we came from. Is like this isn't enough.
Yep.
And that this isn't enough is a hard thing to get away from. And it's a hard thing because you use it at first as fuel.
And oh, God, yeah.
You know, and it is what makes your engine run.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get to a certain age and you're like, oh, man, I'm fucking miserable.
Yeah, I can't run my engine on rage.
Yeah, I got to convert this engine to something else. Yeah. So, yeah.
But I do find that the biggest people in the world, you're like, you'll meet them and then suddenly they'll make a comment. You're like, oh, my God. Tom Hanks isn't fulfilled.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Right, yeah.
So, and I'm at that now, but here's the thing, this dilemma, and it happened this week, and it was a revelation to me that I don't even know if I wish I'd had it, but it was like, and the moment I did, a cloud lifted that had been in my head for quite a while, and I went, and the idea was, I'm going to retire. And I never, ever thought that was an option. But this time I went, that wouldn't be so bad because I think to myself, maybe this chase is hurting me.
Yeah.
Getting what I'm due and getting a show and having a comeback. And I'm like, holy cow. No one's interested in the man, their late 50s, white man, his late 50s and their comeback.
Yeah.
Like, get over yourself. Being gay isn't enough anymore.
Yeah.
And I went, well, and as if it's not that this business is going to go, I was wrong. It doesn't care. It's driven by money.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh man, dude. Because I thought, well, I can retire. I don't have the money, but I can live very frugally. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that something will come along every once in a while, and I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I could write books.
Hannibal was – it was so wonderful to see you on Hannibal.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But even Hannibal, the part of me was like, why am I the smallest character on the show? But that's it.
Because somebody's got to be.
I know.
You know?
But, David Cross isn't in one scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that bold. And so there was a. And I'm very grateful for that show. I think it's a masterpiece that Brian Fuller gave. He's one of those people that throughout my career, he's given me real solids. Like he was a young writer on Star Trek Voyager. And and he was part of the. And him and Braga wanted to get me to play a character on that. And that's the only time in Hollywood that I ever played. And it was probably the last time I was on network television up until Hannibal. That's a long time ago. But I played a straight guy. And all I wanted to do was play just a guy.
Yeah.
I've never done romantic comedy. And I played a monk with a giant blue head. That's the only way Hollywood would let me be heterosexual. We'll make him incredibly unfuckable. That'll show him.
Hey, look, in this day and age, a giant blue head might be very fuckable to somebody.
This character had so much confidence that I went after 7 of 9. And and it was such a thrill for me. I thought, if I'd only stayed in the closet, I could have done this. I could have, you know. But you know, I can't remember what my point was originally.
Oh, because I said Hannibal. Yeah. And you were saying how this writer had been good to you.
Very, Brian. Yes. Yeah. And Brandon Braga, who brought me in for that. But the retirement. I'm going. Well, I wouldn't be retired because I have to create.
Yeah.
But like I talked to an old, very old friend of mine, a very very good friend, and he's given up the business. He's never sounded happier.
Yeah.
Still, he goes up and performs, and he writes stuff, and he does tutorials of people, and he's like, I'm having a great time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, I never thought that was possible, but it might. I think, well, you know, and then of course, when you do that, the next thing you know, your career, and that's the thing I'm going, if I say I'm going to quit comedy, maybe I'll have a Nanette where I'll actually get bigger, and I'll do it with actual jokes.
Right, right.
I know you can't even go there, and that's fine, but I can go there.
All right, yeah.
And we don't want to go there.
I don't want. I'm not going there.
No, of course you're
no,
not.
No. I've often said, and I honestly do believe this. Years ago, Jeff Ross, our executive producer,
ours.
That's right. And you and Kids in the Hall. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And that's That was a follow through. And also, we were all under the Lorne Michaels umbrella.
Yes,
so
yes,
we used
we are.
To. The first time I ever met you guys was at an SNL party.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was struck by. We walked from the party to somewhere else, to another bar.
Yep.
I was struck by how Dave Foley, who I had never met before, within 30 seconds of talking to him, was bitching about all of you guys. Totally.
I'm so glad to hear
totally that. Totally fucking spilling the beans about, you know, fucking Bruce is this way and Mark is this. And I was like, one of my people, a bitch, a fucking raging bitch.
He's a raging
I love
bitch.
You.
Yeah.
So
he's still like that.
I know. I love him. But he also, too, he is one of the truly kindest, most
totally
beautifully moral people in the world.
Yes, he is.
Just absolutely a true blue, wonderful human being.
Yes, he is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, he is.
And,
he's a raging bitch.
Yeah, raging bitch. But I think that's, you know, that's how you deal with it.
We were totally like brothers. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
And I also think back, I'm going, holy cow, the things I've said to people off the record about the other kids in the hall, if they wrote a real book about the way we really were, we will all hate each other.
Yeah,
although
yeah.
I don't know if that's really possible because we really have done everything to each other
yeah.
that anyone could do. I mean,
and you're still together, yeah.
Like
in a sense. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, we are. We're absolutely together.
Yeah.
Like right up to hitting each other, right up to sleeping with each other's mates, that sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
We're talking serious, like kind of like, you know, yeah, very, very serious. Like, you know, what was the band that everybody slept with each other? No, we weren't always sleeping with each other, but, you know, Lindsey Buckingham and...
Oh, Fleetwood Mac. Fleetwood Mac.
We were like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Except we didn't fuck each other.
Yeah.
But we were nasty.
Well, you become... when you, I think that, like, when you have a group identity that's that close, you do become one thing.
We were one.
So there are like the blurring of edges between appropriateness yes. and, you know, boundaries and yeah. personalities.
Like things
it's
really
siblings
mushy.
Siblings do things to each other that yeah. they would never do to another human being. You know, I was part of a couple different comedy groups where it was like, yeah, everybody fucked everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody fucked everybody over. Everybody yes. insulted everybody. Yes. Everybody... did beautiful selfless gestures for yeah. each other. You know, yeah. it just, it happens.
Well,
you know?
I mean, but I look back and I shudder the things I've said about some of them. Eh. But you know what? It doesn't matter.
Especially when people know that the color of your character
yeah.
and the actual, they know your soul. They know yes. your heart. So they know, yes. and they also know like, you're a bitch too.
Oh God, I'm awful. I'm a petty bitch.
Oh, yeah, I have to, there's so many times bitch. when I am about to bitch to someone about another person yeah. and I have to say, look, this is mostly about me,
yeah.
but that motherfucker, and, you know, because I know full well, like this is not, this person is just living their life, being who they are, and I'm creating the poison. It's yeah. my fucking brain going like, oh my God, if that fucker says that thing again, you know, it's what therapy's for, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always thought the business with comedy itself was therapy.
Yeah.
And it is, but it's not quite enough.
Oh, no, it's not.
You know.
Especially because it will exploit your warts. Oh, rather than true. Cure your warts, you
yes.
know.
It so, will, yeah, yeah. Garden, it turns them into a wart
yeah.
garden. I guess
true.
That's what a great career is, a wart garden.
Lovely.
And some of those people with the most beautiful, virulent warts aren't satisfied.
Oh, no.
They're like, what? You just, what is it? You can't be satisfied with that wart that's taken over your entire
yeah, yeah,
hand.
Yeah.
No.
Or the people, or the like the really biggie bigs.
Oh, yeah.
That just don't, they're not even fucking human anymore.
Yeah.
Like I have yeah. occasionally to talk to some of the biggie bigs.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is like talking to an interactive exhibit.
Yeah.
This is, there have been times too when I've tried to kind of just like, come on, let's crack through that. Let's, right. you know, nope.
No.
Nope. And I don't know whether it's whether the real self doesn't exist or whether it's so hidden that there's just no possible way that a guy like me, who a talk show asshole, they're ever going to give me a glimpse.
Right.
And then there are other people, wonderfully successful,
oh, God.
Beautifully,
yeah. Yeah.
Hilariously talented people who are every bit
like
themselves.
Like Tom Hanks, who I just attacked earlier
time.
For no
yeah, yeah.
reason.
But I mean, you used him as an example.
Of course
an
I did.
Extreme example.
Extreme example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But those people.
Tom Hanks is probably dissatisfied.
It's hard to believe, but
it's probably a little bit. Yeah.
He probably went, why was I such, why did I make such soft choices? Like, why did
Joe
I have to
versus
be so,
the volcano.
Yeah, like, why does he be so
yeah, yeah,
likable
yeah.
and everything?
Turner and Hooch. I should have known better.
I should have had a basketball and a soccer ball. That just wasn't inclusive enough.
I was sports phobic.
If they remade that movie now, you'd have to have about 8 different balls,
yeah, yeah,
a baseball,
yeah.
a soccer ball. This is all I know, is a football.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Is there other balls?
Right.
Yeah.
Highlight ball.
Highlight ball.
Yeah, yeah. All right, it's
tennis,
it's
ping pong.
Yeah.
Everybody represent, every ball represented.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you have like any kind of like professional goal that yeah. you're really kind of...
Well, I want my own show.
Yeah,
and I'm peddling a pilot right now.
Yeah,
that I who knows?
Yeah.
And I want to do my own thing. Like, I think to myself, well, this is the time when I've never gotten any, like, I've never had any of my stories done. Like, I've never gotten a show or anything like that. And I've been pitching for ever, and I've never gotten anything. And I think this might be, I might finally be at that point. Who knows? But I'd like that. And I have a couple of movies I'd like to get made. I want to put my writing out there.
Yeah.
And I'm also at the point where I go, like, I've been writing this screenplay for 20 years, and I've finally finished it, but I've aged out of the main part. Mm. Like, I can't play any of the parts any longer.
I've often thought there's, like, I'd be happy. I honestly, I love acting, and I don't get to act enough, but there is a part of me that sometimes ideas that I have, I think, because, you know, frequently, like, if I write a pilot, like, I just wrote a pilot recently, mm-hmm. and it's just sort of expected that I'm writing it for myself.
Right.
But there are so many ideas that I have, like, I'm just like,
yeah.
Why not have someone else do that?
Yeah.
And then I don't have to worry about being looked at.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I'm at that place now when I never thought I would get there.
Like, yeah.
It was just too much of an egomaniac. I'm a star! Oh, boy, what a bore.
Says the guy on the bus.
Yes! I'm a star! Sir, you got your transfer, Pat?
Sir,
yeah,
please.
My transfer. Here's my star transfer! but I totally could do it. All I want to do is tell stories. And
yeah.
So I'd be completely, like, I have this other one that I've written, which is a character of mine that I used to do in the Kids in the Hall years ago, Danny Husk, my businessman character. And I'm like, I can't, I guess I could. Maybe in a different generation, 25 years ago, it's like a kind of, if I was Leslie Nielsen, I could play the part, but no one's going to buy me now as like a 35-year-old man. It's silly.
Yeah.
But then I thought, well, maybe I could get a genuine movie star to play the part.
Oh, yeah.
I never, before I'd be like, that's impossible. Now I'd be like, yeah, I don't care.
No, there's so, yeah.
I don't care. And I like to write books. And I go back to Narnia. I go, this my real goal is I'd like to write a series of books that change young people's lives.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I keep thinking, I've been snoozing on my writing career. And
yeah.
I think I need to I think I need to concentrate more on that.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, the gimmick of this show, like I said, is
what was the other questions?
Where do you come from? Where are you going? And what have you learned? And I think
we've said all those things.
We certainly have said all those things. Yeah. And that's, you know,
we did talk about all that.
Oh, all of that. Yeah, yeah. And that's the idea of this show is that, like, yeah, we'll get there. Although I got notes early on of sort of like, you really need to hit the questions on it.
Like, who gives you those notes?
These two. There's
people should know that there's two people watching that are just so
they're security guards
looking, and just everything we say, they look at each other,
rolling their eyes,
and the one of them with that pad writing things down. I'm like, a lot of crossing out and heavy writing.
A lot of very, very like old movie Italian slapping of the forehead and then dragging the hand down the face.
I know. So I'm just saying it's very, you know, I've done my best to ignore them.
I understand.
But very.
The wall of judgment is hard to deal with.
It is. It's Jacques Hughes. It's like the Jacques Hughes team. 12 angry men, please. And some of them are women.
Yeah. No, but this has honestly been like really, one of the most freeform ones of these, and it's been, you know, when I started doing, you know, this is a thing too. Like
when you thought you would invent the podcast.
Yeah, we were joking about that earlier because apparently on the cover of Variety,
it's Conan.
What does it say? It's Conan.
Conan,
and what does it say?
Like the podcast revolution finally, like, you know, erupts, and it's Conan O'Brien leading the charge, and I'm like, well.
Because
you're going to put that in. I haven't been on your show in 20 years.
When somebody says to Conan, you should do a podcast, and he goes, all right. Yeah. He reinvigorated the industry.
If you ever did have me back on, I'd bring that Variety cover.
Sure, of course.
You know I would.
I know.
And even if I promised I wouldn't, I'm going to
bring it. Oh, he'd be fine with it.
Of course he would.
He'd be fine with it. Well, that's what we were saying. I was saying, like, you were saying he's probably mortified by it, and he probably is a little mortified by it. Yeah, because
he didn't ask to be on the cover.
He and I are both Johnny come latelys to this thing, and I always, because I had, I haven't been a big podcast consumer. You know, I listen a little bit, but not a lot, and certainly not like with any regularity, one that I have to subscribe to and hear every week. So I had had people, Team Richter, as I like to call
Team
them,
Richter.
The people that, you know, siphon off the top of my income, and kept saying, you should do a podcast. And I was like, number one, this is my stupid remnant Midwestern, I would feel too dilettantish. Like I'm not, it's not, I'm
that's
not
very
of that. Yeah. And I just like, I feel like a phony.
Yeah.
You know, like, in fact, like, this is, my assistant was, like, she, because you advertise things on this, and they, one of the things they want you to do is, like, have a personal experience with it. So, if you're advertising underwear, they, you know, you get a couple free pairs of underwear. Mm-hmm. And one of them was a turntable. Mm-hmm. And I had just, because I moved into a new apartment, I had just bought a turntable a couple months before, but I kept the one that they sent me, and I gave the old one, which was 2 months old, to my assistant. And she's like, why not just give us the one that's already in a box? And I said, because I have to say, I like this turntable. And so I want to be able to say that with some honesty. And she was like, you idiot. Yeah. You could just say, I like this turntable. Yeah. And I was like, I know, but for me, for my own personal calculus, I want to be able to say, this thing sounds great. And it really, because I it's in my house and I am actually using it. So
that's really honorable of you.
Well, it's almost like a tick. You know, it's almost like sort of inconvenient, you know, and that's like, and to do a podcast and to say like, I don't know, I don't listen to him. I feel like an asshole. I feel like people be like, oh, here he comes, you know. And so finally, just as part of a, like, start to just say yes to things and start to sort of churn up the water and see
what. Saying yes to the universe?
Yes. Just, you know. And so I was like, you know what? I will do a podcast. And I kind of had this idea for this podcast. But I still was sort of like, you know, it's daunting. They say like 45 a year. It's like, Jesus, Woo. But the funniest part was that, like, when I was like, finally said to Team Richter, you know what? I will do a podcast. And they hooked me up with the podcast agent at UTA. And then like 2 days later, because I'm not really in the loop a lot with a lot of the stuff that goes on here because of my own choosing. But 2 days later, it's like, Conan's doing a podcast. It's like, motherfucker. God damn it. I have anything?
Is that why you're not at Earwolf?
No, I am at Earwolf.
Okay.
This is all part of Team Coco Earwolf. It's all like a in Stitcher. They're all, you know, it's all, they're all a sort of like, you know.
I didn't know that.
All fingers of the same fist,
okay.
The same podcasting fist. But yeah, so Conan, you know, it's just, it's what, it's, you got to do something, you know, and it's like this kind of, you know, it just seems like, let's do this. And I was, like I say, I'm like, I don't know if I love doing this. It's really enjoyable. I'm not going to get rich doing this.
Right. And you're already rich.
And
you don't need to.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not going to get richer.
Relative terms. Yeah. but, you know, It's just, I'm trying to just derive enjoyment from the things that I'm doing rather than the what they're going to lead to, you know? And it's just, that's just being old, you know, that's just being old and kind of, and that also too is like, that's anti-bitterness medicine.
Yes.
Is to really, really work at that, like to just be okay doing this. And one thing I was going to say earlier is that like something that I feel is like almost detrimental to my career is that I derive as much enjoyment from making a nice meal for people as I do from making a television show. And if I, you know, I started to tell you, Jeff Ross, years ago, I said some crack about, you know, if I won the lottery, you'd never see me again. And he went, oh, come on. And I went, no.
Well, that's Dave Foley to a T.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. Really. If I made a pile of money, I'd be like, you know, Hugh Beaumont with My Christmas Tree Farm, you know, which it's a reference no one will get. The dad from Leave It to Beaver.
Oh, yeah, I remember him.
Just like, fuck, Leave It to Beaver, I'm out of here. I'm going to Christmas Tree Farm up in the middle
of nowhere.
That's
what he did?
Yeah, yeah.
But Barbara Billingsley didn't.
No, she certainly didn't. She kept working.
She kept working. She needed she had to pay off. Each episode was a pearl. She had to pay off the pearl necklace that she always wore.
Really?
No, I just made that up.
I think they bought her that pearl necklace.
Do you think so?
I think
it was
a
real pearl necklace?
I don't know.
Yeah. Of course, referring to...
That's for the was next
there, was
episode.
There, no, there was not a... There wasn't like a line of ropey semen around.
No, certainly not.
At least not on camera. Not on camera.
I mean, who knows?
Who knows what she was like?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she might have been a Florence Henderson, just a real, you
a
know,
real
just a real animal.
Horn dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have a podcast.
I do.
That I'm going to be on.
Yes, you are.
And I, like I told Scott earlier, I got an email today. Scott's plug was the...
Because they know I don't plug anything.
Scott's
I never do.
Plug.
I never would plug things
in
your
like,
show.
I don't... That's very personal. I don't want to know about Scott's plug.
Right.
I mean, I do, but...
Of course, you need to know more about my plug.
Yes. But I'm going to be on it soon.
It's online now.
It's on... So
anybody can activate the vibrating
oh, my goodness.
From anywhere in this world.
That's known as dildonics.
It is a dildonic.
Yeah, yeah,
I get
nice.
A lot from South Korea, which means I must be very hip because a lot of K-poppers are activating.
K-poppers. Oh, boy, I could use some K-poppers right now.
Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I just spilled some
that's all right.
water. I got so excited about thinking about doing Korean poppers. See, I always loved you because you knew that reference and you knew even then.
Sure, no. I'm very gay adjacent.
You're
like, seriously, the only thing keeping me.
You were meant
me,
to have a gay son.
The only thing keeping me. And my dad is gay.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. That's the right. only thing keeping me from being gay is this fucking burdensome heterosexuality.
I know.
My love of the puss.
I know.
Oh,
I know.
It's
you've
tiresome.
Gone on and on about
it. Oh, love it.
When are you going to do. Would it be possible for you to do a podcast on your love of the puss? No, but I'm serious. There's not enough
for the love of the puss.
For the love of the puss, get out and do a podcast. But there's just not enough of that kind of talk anymore, and I really miss it.
I was just having this idea of like of a podcast called "I'm Worried Sick About You." So it'd be like, Ellen DeGeneres, I'm worried sick about you.
But I am.
Yeah. Jared Leto, I'm worried sick about
Jared
you.
Jared Kiso, we're worried about all the Jareds. Pedophile Jared, all the Jareds are in trouble.
Thank God I remember what the plug was because we just wiped up the water with it.
Yes.
Your podcast is called PTS Diva on Stitcher.
Yeah, it's called PTS Diva, and it's going to launch September, I guess, like the... Labor Day weekend, right? And it's not fun like yours.
It's not?
Well, it's fun because it's me. I try to make things fun, but it's about trauma.
Mm.
So it's about different traumas in my life and how other people, and I bring in people that have also been through traumas or help or been part of my trauma, and yours is going to be the suicide episode, and it's going to be this career suicide episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to talk to you about that.
And
hopefully you will.
I absolutely will. I'll talk to you about anything.
But so it's about, I'm trying to basically talk about trauma and the role in art. And the role in shaping a human being, and how you can overcome it. And because I thought it's about time for me to, although most of my comedy is about trauma, but it's just about basically getting over things, and it's wrapped around certain events in my life that were very difficult that I'm trying to completely let go of.
Yeah.
One of them is the bitterness towards show business.
To me, that sounds pretty goddamn fascinating, and also something that I don't hear much about.
No,
I mean, there's a lot of sort of mental health podcasts.
Yeah, this is comedy. Like each one
but
will
I
also
think
have
that this
pieces.
Sounds,
like
yeah.
each one will have a story that I've written that's inspired by it, or they'll have a monologue or a sketch. So there'll always be an artistic, a creative.
That's wonderful.
Reaction to trauma.
I'm too lazy for that.
Well, I've given myself a lot of work. Which This is much more fun. But a lot of work. I have to write so much. But I'm hoping it might lead to a book.
That's wonderful.
You know, but came up with a title, and I went, wow, the title.
It's pretty great.
PTSD was a great title.
PTSD is fantastic.
And so I have to follow the title.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Well, I love you.
I love you too, Andy.
I love you very much. And this has been a really, really I think, a really useful episode of this stupid thing.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because it's true. It's, I tell you, that time by your pool when you told me that, it's been reverberating in my head ever since.
That makes me feel really, really good.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Gandalf. Which, let me just—
Fly, you fool.
And let me be honest. I just want to put it out there. I would be the best Gandalf in the new Lord of the Rings reboot.
Mm.
And if people aren't going to give me a chance—
That's going to be 20 years, though, at least, don't you think?
It's coming out soon.
No shit, they're rebooting the whole fucking thing again?
As a television series,
oh.
I think for Amazon.
Oh, wow.
And I'm very, very excited about it. And wow. I think I'm at my state, here it is. I feel like I'm Gandalf the Grey, and I need to come out of that cave.
Right.
As Gandalf the White.
The White, yeah.
So I'm just saying, I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not, you know, acting, I mean, might not do as much of it as I never even done a lot lately, as much as I thought I was doing. But when I do come out of retirement, it will, I'm just going to say, it'll be for as Gandalf. And I can do British accents.
Listen up, Hollywood.
Listen up, Hollywood.
Yeah, God damn it.
Gandalf's right here.
Yeah, Gandalf is right here. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And God bless you. And I will be seeing you around Burbank.
You will.
And
spotted me on the street walking.
I did. And thank you out there for listening to another episode of The Three Questions. And we will be back next time. Bye-bye. Got a big, big love.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It's produced by me, Kevin Bartelt, executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Chris Bannon and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, associate produced by Jen Samples and Galit Sahayak, and engineered by Will Becton. And if you haven't already, make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production. In association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at tmobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at tmobile.com.